you just scotch tape it to your upper lip? Like,
just kind of put it right here. That should work pretty well.
That sounds horrible. Don't do that.
What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
Man being realistic.
As the story grows.
Back to the next chapter of As the Story Grows. My name is Trav, and today I am the honored, esteemed privilege to talk to Ben Sharp of Cloud Kicker.
Hi.
Is Cloud Kicker.
Is.
Am. You're like, you are to Cloud Kicker what Trent is to Nine Inch Nails.
I think that's fair.
Okay. Thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Going to hear a little bowl clanking in the background. Ben hasn't eaten yet. His blood, he's saying crazy things. Hopefully his noodles make him less insane.
Yeah. It's coming back to and regaining clarity of consciousness.
That's good. That's what I need.
Yeah.
It's going to make for a boring podcast. I just want to sit around and talk about statistics and boring things. I mean, so I need you level headed here, you know?
Good.
So anyway, the reason I wanted to talk to you, I never heard of Cloud Kicker before. And probably about a year ago, I heard this band, Cloud Kicker, is going out with Intronaut. Mm-hmm. I love Intronaut. I play drums.
Cool.
I play drums, and Danny is like he's fantastic, you know?
Right.
So I was like, great. That's good for them. That's a great tour. And Tesseract, right?
Yeah.
Tesseract?
I think they prefer Tesseract.
Tesseract. So I did say it right the first time, and I corrected myself. But I could edit that out and sound great.
No, it's Tesseract, but it's funny that you would call them Tesseract. Let's keep calling them that.
See, now I just feel, full. Start over. Welcome back to As the Story Grows. Tesseract. It's their fault for having such a hard to pronounce name.
I know.
Cloud Kicker. I could figure that out. I got that after like three tries.
Cloud is easy, and kick is very easy also.
Right. So when I heard that Cloud Kicker was going out with Intronaut, you can see the problem right there. What the guy meant was Cloud Kicker doesn't go out, and they're finally going out with Intronaut, like as your band.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, wait, what? What is that? And then I did more research, and I found out that it's Cloud Kicker is just this dude in Ohio making this amazing music. And, you know, that's you. And you actually went out and played with someone who I consider to be, I mean, Habitual Levitations was like one of the better albums I've heard in a long time. And I have a lot of respect for the guy who said, well, I want to do the normal work thing. I want to do the normal job thing. I want an income. I want to get married. I want to, like, you know, buy stuff and pay bills or whatever. But I'm going to do music on the side.
Yeah.
And your side project, your little side thing that you do,
yeah,
is big enough that it has gotten quite a bit of publicity, and the Intronaut thing came up and it got my attention, and I just wanted to talk to you about it and see what makes an operation like this tick.
Okay.
So I cheated and I listened to 100 Words or Less. Excellent podcast, by the way, not just your episode, all of his. Ray does a great job.
Yeah. He's really enthusiastic.
Yeah, he really is. He's got a good radio voice. He sounds like all his guests are, he's so thrilled to get them all.
Right.
I'm not as thrilled to talk to you. I'm not. But yeah.
Yeah.
Have you spoken on any podcasts since the Intronaut thing?
I don't think so.
Awesome, man. That made my day.
Yeah.
Cool. Glad to hear that.
You got first access, I guess.
I have the exclusive of what you did a year ago.
Yeah. Over a year ago.
Right on. That's all right. I know you started in California. You moved to Ohio. I don't know why you moved to Ohio. Maybe I missed that. Was that work-related?
Oh, that was just it was work-related. I moved in 2000, at the very end of 2007. I got a job that took me across the country from LA to Columbus, which is actually kind of cool because at the time I was 22 and I wasn't particularly keen on staying in LA, and I was very open to, you know, whatever opportunities that there were. And I just happened to find a job in Columbus.
He was happy to leave LA to come to Ohio.
Yeah, well, Columbus is pretty cool. It's a younger city. I made some really good friends there. I met my wife there. And on top of all of that, like, it takes 25 minutes to drive from one end of the city to the other. And the worse the traffic gets is, like, you slow down to 55 miles an hour for a few minutes, and then you speed back up. So that – I was really enthusiastic about that. Right. And the seasons were also cool. Like, I had 22 years of hot and sunny, and I found it a little boring. So I didn't mind having that variety. Mm. And I still don't. I mean, I'm not as thrilled when it snows anymore, but it's not like
yeah, it wears off.
Yeah, that kind of wore off a little bit, but when we had our house in Columbus, it was a little bit bigger of a bummer because we had a really long driveway. So I don't have to worry about that anymore. But everyone always, the first reaction I always get is about like how it must've been a huge culture shock. And it was, but it was a culture shock in a good way.
Right.
I really felt more like myself, in Columbus than I did growing up in LA.
I remember you saying that. That's interesting. Everybody would expect, you got to move out west. You have to, you know, you haven't really lived until you've been a New Yorker or you've lived in LA. And I don't find either appealing, frankly. I'm not in either of them.
Yeah, it was really interesting when I moved to Columbus. I met a lot of people that wanted to go the other way that were like I just got there, and they then they were talking to me about how their dream was like move to LA. And of course, like, I think a lot of them thought they were going to do that and then become famous, and I was like, whoa, you have no idea what it's like.
They obviously didn't listen to any hair metal songs from 1986 to 92. That's what they were all about.
Right. Or that David Cross bit about how there's at any given time, there's a million people in LA that all think they're going to be super famous.
I've never heard it. I love Cross, but I've never heard
it. Yeah. That's an older one, but it's pretty good if you ever listen to it.
I'm going to look that up because I'm a big Arrested Development fan, and oh my God, his character Tobias was just consistently one of the funniest things I've ever watched. Anyway, we're way off on a tangent.
Afraid I just blew myself.
So, hooray, Ohio. Now you're in Pittsburgh. Was that another business move?
Yep. Same job, just different location.
Got it. All right. Yeah. Is this kind of like, are you settling down a little bit? Like, you think you're going to be here a while, or is being a pilot, by the way, you're a commercial pilot.
Right.
Is being a pilot the type of job where just be prepared every couple of years you might move? You might be in Omaha next year or something.
I think this was our last big move. It wasn't as fun as I remember moving from LA to Columbus being. I mean, my wife and I decided this opportunity came up, bigger position, all that stuff. It was definitely a promotion for me, and it was in Pittsburgh. So we said, all right, well, she had lived in Ohio pretty much her whole life. Mm-hmm. I thought it might be cool to do something new. We moved up to Pittsburgh, but man, I totally underestimated how much effort it takes to, completely start over again. Like, doing it when you're 22 is one thing. It seems like when you're 30, it's a whole different thing.
I'm with you. That's right around. Let me think. I was moved for the second time. I bought my first house. So when you're consolidating from an apartment, it's like, yay, look at all this room.
Right.
And then we had twins.
Right.
Filled that house, and then we got pregnant with a third one. Now we got to move again. Moving from the first house to the second house was, outside of losing a parent, the worst week of my life. It was so bad. I just remember getting up, working 17 straight hours, going to sleep, getting up 17 more. It sucked so bad. I don't ever want to move again. If this house burns down, I don't think I'm leaving. I'm probably just going to lay in the rubble. I'm not moving my stuff again.
Right. We did an interesting thing. We had a house in Columbus, and we moved to a studio apartment in Pittsburgh. So we got rid of a lot of our stuff, right, which is actually kind of cool.
Cleansing. Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah. I went down in the basement, and I was like, all right, this stuff has been down here for a year or 2 years. That's how long we lived in the house. Mm-hmm. This stuff has been down here for 2 years, and I'd never even look at it. So we probably don't need it. So we just threw all that away. We sold a bunch of our furniture on Craigslist. And now we have just enough. I can look around this room and just see all the stuff that we have. And it's very satisfying for me to kind of pare down. I think I could even do more. I'm always looking for ways to consolidate. Like, if I buy a new thing, I my criteria for buying something new is well, if I buy this thing, can I get rid of two other things?
I like that.
And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But at the very least, if I buy something new, I try to replace something.
Sure.
And that has a dual purpose of you don't keep clutter around, but also you're really only buying things that you need. And there's only, I've gotten to a point where I don't really need anything else,
Yep. Oh, sounds great. Coming from a guy with three kids. Oh my God.
Oh, well, you're in a whole different world than me.
I am, but I would still love to heave 3/4 of everything we own in a dumpster. Cause I haven't touched, like you said, I haven't touched it in 2 years. You can't possibly tell me the kids are playing with every single toy that's laying on the floor.
Yeah. But it kind of seems like when you have kids, that whole thing starts over. Because the kids,
ruin everything, Ben, don't do it.
The kids don't know about consolidation. They just want more stuff.
They just consume, and they want more, and they want more. Yeah, I know.
They're new. They're new people that don't have any experiences.
Mm-hmm. They're terrible. They're new, terrible, awful people that don't learn anything.
No manners, no sense of right or wrong.
They're terrible. I don't know why we do this to ourselves.
Yeah.
So now you and the wife and the dog, what's your dog's name?
Inu.
Inu.
It's the Japanese word for dog.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay. Just making sure, because a lot of people get tattoos and they think it means water and it actually means something else. I'm just making sure you didn't get that off a tattoo parlor or something.
Nope.
Inu, the dog, and you and the wife are in Pittsburgh now.
Yeah.
And you've seen a bunch of Pirates games, you said. That's cool.
That's right. We've been to 9 so far. We're one game under 500, so we need to even it out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm a Phillies fan, so we ain't talking about baseball. Maybe next year. Good grief.
Sorry for your season.
Shut up. Don't get me started on Ruben Amaro, how we're paying players to not be on the Phillies more than we're paying the actual Phillies.
Hey, I got lucky because I moved to Pittsburgh in 2015. If I had moved up here in like 2008, 2009, I would have been not nearly as
or any year up until 2 years ago for the past 50 years, maybe. Or nah, they were all right in the 80s. Whatever, it doesn't matter. You know what I like about McCutchen?
What?
When he gets up to bat, he has no glamour about him at all.
Oh, he's so like even keeled.
Yeah, he keeps his right foot in the box. He takes one step out. He looks at the coach, steps back in. He doesn't do any craziness. He just lays the bat on his shoulder and he's like,
bro. Yeah.
And I just, I like that about him. I call him Kutch, like him and I go back to the war. You know what I mean?
Well, everybody's on a first name or everybody's on a Kutch basis with Andrew McCutchen.
Because he's Kutch. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
We better not talk about sports. I'll get tweets. Shut up. Stop talking about sports on your podcast.
Yeah.
And there it is. McCutchen hit and Delgado run from the game.
So you know what I wanted to ask you is.
Yeah, what?
It seems to me like, just from what I know about you,
uh-huh.
You were always more interested in being a musician than you were a rock star.
Oh, yeah, I think that's accurate.
I've always said that about myself and other people that I think are like-minded. You can tell a difference. Some people just need attention and they're doing it for that. And there's other people that just are content to, sounds fruity, but to create the art that they want to create the way that they want to.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And thank you. And you've established yourself in a way that you're in control of Cloud Kicker. Cloud Kicker is going to sound the way you want it to. And there isn't any label dictating anything, or there isn't any, well, you have to go tour here. Yeah, you're completely in charge of how this thing sounds from the ground up, which I love, respect, and adore. That is, I wish there were more bands out there doing that because they're not in a position to do it. They have to start selling records, so they have to start sounding like other things that sell records, you know?
Well, I mean, the way the industry's going, you might get your wish. Like, it just... Depending on who you talk to, things are just getting terrible. But I don't think they're so bad at all.
Everybody I talk to is terrible. So
well, it seems like for the lower end has come up because like I couldn't be doing this 20 years ago,
right?
But the top end has kind of come down.
Yeah,
it's shifted definitely, but it just seems like it's the. There's always going to be like the Coldplays and the U2s that just make absurd amounts of money. Sure. I guess that's a bit dated. I guess now it's like Taylor Swift and I don't know, Kanye West or something. I guess contemporary examples. There's always going to be like some, just very broadly appealing type of music that generates a lot of money. But the kind of in-between stuff, it seems like is tapering off.
I think they're the lower class musician is used to clawing a little bit more. So now there's more to claw at. You can get your own software. You can get your own studio set up. You know.
Yeah, you can do all that, but you still have to have good music that people like. It's never been easier to make music, but like you still have to make good music.
Right. The problem is it's never been easier to make music, so everyone can.
Right.
Yeah.
And I've heard so much music, people send me emails of like, hey, listen to my thing that I did. And I've heard so much music that sounds super polished and like professional, but it's just got, there's nothing there, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Especially metal. Metal is like, it's so crystal clean. Everything's perfect.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the new thing. That's a big reason why, I mean, I'm sure you appreciate this too, but that's a big reason why why I respect Intronaut the way that I do, because they're not at all, and I especially saw this on tour with them, kind of to get that perspective from dealing with the people as individuals and as a band, like, just not at all about, they'd rather have a subpar individual performance if the group performance was better, and recording that live album with them was pretty cool in that regard, to just, have that experience, which kind of later on influenced, it has influenced the way that I approach the production also.
Mm. So you've carried some experiences from the live intronaut stuff into future Cloud Kicker.
Yeah, absolutely.
Neat. That's good to hear.
I think the biggest thing for me was playing live to people night after night after night. Like I realized that people don't really know, like you'd think that you had like this really bad show or like, oh man, I can't believe that I screwed that up. I mean, I remember I was in Canada somewhere, I think it was in Calgary, and like for the first like song, I tuned like two strings, like a half tone below where they should have been. Okay. It was something where it was just so it. And as soon as the song started, I realized my mistake, but by then it was too late. Like, I was like, oh crap.
Yeah.
And I just had to like deal with that. And I was just mortified by like, I can't believe that I did that. But then at the end of that show, people were like, oh my God, it was amazing. Like you guys sounded great. And you know, that's kind of an extreme example, but like playing night after night, you mess things up here or there, but sure, nobody ever notices. I mean, I was on the flip side of that, like, you know, every night after Cloud Kicker played, like Intronaut would play and they'd go through their whole set. And then afterwards, I always thought that they were just phenomenal.
Yeah.
But afterwards, you know, they'd be talking about, you know, we missed that. We didn't do that right. And
they go down like, the punch list of all the mistakes, and you're like, you're kidding. I didn't hear any of those.
Right. I was like, dude, I've been listening to these songs for like a month and I still can't tell like when you guys mess up. So that like took a lot of the pressure off me, like things needing to be perfect. And that kind of comes through on a, you know, obviously on a recording, everything's so much more clear than in a live setting, but there is like, to some degree, there's a thing about like you're really the only one that knows what a perfect performance is, and to kind of obsess about obtaining that perfection instead of focusing on what the entire dynamic of the song is kind of silly.
Right.
When you think about it.
It makes a lot of sense. Just supposed to be as prepared as you can be with all the information that you can get your hands on at that time, and then go do everything that you can do. And something bad is, you're still going to take a step in the wrong direction and unplug a cord and go, oh, jeez. Yeah. Like how many times do you drop a drumstick? My wife tells me that all the time. Not that she comes and sees me much and I don't play out much anymore, but she says, I know every single mistake you made because you make that stupid face. If you would just play through it, no one would have even noticed you dropped the stick, but instead you make the big exaggeration.
Yeah, that's what I learned. I learned pretty early on this tour, like that the, just don't call attention to it and no one will ever know.
Just,
and
that's, wow.
Yeah, you know, that's good life advice too.
Absolutely. You're right.
Just be prepared as you can and then do the thing, and you're still like, it's not going to be perfect, but you know, you can still achieve what you wanted to achieve.
Do your best. Sounds cheesy. Sounds like something dumb that your grandma would have on her wall or something, but you just get as prepared as you can, do your best. And if something goes wrong, hey, I was as prepared as I could be, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Do you have any future plans to do anything like you did with Intronaut again? I bet you've gotten that question a dozen times.
You mean touring?
Yeah, like playing live and like borrowing a band?
No, not right now. It doesn't. I don't even know if I'd be able to do it. I don't know that it won't ever happen, but right now I'm not even thinking about it.
Because you had to get time off from your job.
Yeah, I took a leave of absence for the month of April, and
you can't just keep doing that.
I can't.
Can I not come to work for another month again?
Another month. That was like miraculous. I was so surprised that I was even able to get that in the first place.
I read that. If I went to my boss and said, "Can I have a month off?
Yeah,
to go play rock music," he'd be like, "Sure, just don't come back."
After right.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of, the way that I did it with my job is I basically told them that it was for like I was working on my side business and I needed to like what did I say? I said I needed to like train some new associates or something. Like, it wasn't completely a lie. It wasn't a lie, but
it was just stretched.
It's, you know, there's certain ways that you can phrase things that make them sound a little bit more legitimate.
I have to train new associates.
Yeah.
For my side business, my startup. You've spread that butter about as thin as you can go. What you meant was I have to teach Intronaut my album.
Yeah. It worked.
You got off work. Yeah.
So I did it right.
Nice. Have you ever planned on recording a Cloud Kicker album with live musicians?
I've been thinking about it after that whole experience, but I don't know that it'll happen. Because again, like that's a time commitment too. Because the way that I record things now, like I'll be writing the music in between, like on my days off. I don't need any real amount of days to like get an album done. It's just right. it happens, you know, in between me doing other stuff. So I would have to consolidate all that into like a chunk of time. And it's just, right. It's the time thing again.
Right.
Because right. I don't think people are going to, you know, come all the way out to Pittsburgh. I think I'd probably have to go somewhere.
Yeah. Or you'd have to do, I mean, there's so many bands out there now that are like, they have one guy that lives in this corner of the country and another guy that lives in, you know, over here and there, and they just trade files and everything. But I can understand how the time you lose going back and forth and back and forth when you can just do it yourself. I was just wondering, so now that you got a taste with live musicians, I was wondering if that was something that you ever considered doing or not.
I think more interesting would be to like write an album with other people. You know, not just write it all myself and then record it with other people. That I would be really interested in doing that just because it'd be something different. You know, I've been doing like the do everything myself thing for 8 years now. So that would just be something different to do.
As Cloud Kicker or just tooling around with somebody?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I guess as Cloud Kicker. Mm-hmm. I was kind of thinking of the Intronaut guys just because I couldn't imagine doing it with anybody else.
Yeah. Where are they from?
LA.
Yeah, that's not near Pittsburgh.
No. It's not very close at all.
I just checked. It's not near.
No, if you look on a map, like it's actually pretty far away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like they have water to the left of them. Huh? And you're gonna have water closer to the right of you. That's gonna be a problem.
It's an interesting way of looking at it. I guess that's right.
I was just trying to think of a funnier way to say what you said, but it'll get a lot of laughs. I can hear the crowd now. Mm-hmm. I like the fact that you're doing what you're doing because it isn't about getting bigger and perpetuating and please listen to my Bandcamp and you know, sell this many to do this, to make this many shirts, to get this many stickers, to get this tour.
Yeah, that seems kind of like a
bottomless pit.
Kind of like a rat race sort of thing.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I've even kind of gotten a little bit uncomfortable with just the current state of things.
What do you mean?
Just the amount of time that I put into like restocking merch, reordering albums, you know, records, dealing with, you know, shipping stuff. I mean, I don't do any of the shipping myself anymore. I did that for a little while. That was a full-time job unto itself, like just packaging and taking it to the post office. So someone else does that for me, but even still with the volume of shipping that I do, there's a, you know, I'm getting emails just with that system, you know, two or three times a day of stuff that I have to attend to. So just that level of involvement, it kind of feels like I'm spending a little bit too much time on merch, even though like that's where all the income is from.
Sure. Right.
But again, I just like, I don't really need that income. And recently I've just been thinking about maybe dialing that back a little bit just so I can spend more time on music, you know?
Right.
Maybe not. I've been thinking about like not doing physical copies anymore.
Mm.
Just like going back to just doing digital.
Okay.
Just 'cause, you know, I don't know. That's something I've been mulling over, but I don't know where that'll go.
Hmm. You don't need it.
No, I don't need it. I know that a lot of people really, really enjoy the records. I mean, I stopped doing CDs a little while ago. That was one way of like scaling it back.
Sure.
I think that CDs are just a weird thing to want to have in 2015.
Yeah. Yeah. They're,
I was
just talking to my local record shop. So we just talked about how utilitarian they are, and they're like a place setter for, they're not real. It's just it's a physical copy of the MP3 file.
Yeah. I don't get like, and people were really bummed when I like I'll get emails like, "Hey, you sold your Beacon CDs are sold out. When are you going to get more of those?" I'm not. They're sold out and they're not ever coming back. Oh man, but I really wanted like to have a physical copy. Why? Like every single person has a cell phone, so just play it on your cell phone. And
right.
Like it's not a weird thing in 2015 to have a car that has an auxiliary jack. Like that's sure. standard stuff. So
sure, yeah.
Well, I don't get like, but the quality. All right, well, download you can go to Bandcamp and download the lossless files for free.
Yeah.
And throw them on your phone. I mean, it takes up space, but you don't have to have them on there all the time. Or just burn those to a CD. Like if you don't have any other way of listening to it. So that boggles me that there are some people out there that are still just so hung up on CDs.
Different strokes, man. I think it also would make a sense of urgency the next time that, I mean, you just said you might not do it, but if Cloud Kicker makes a decision to run CDs again, let's get one then.
Yep. Yeah, maybe. So yeah, that's kind of what I've been thinking about. Just talking about simplification before, like,
sure.
Sometimes I just feel like the whole like merch thing needs to be simplified a little bit.
Right. Just you completely finish an album and hit upload to Bandcamp and go there. I'm done on the next album.
That's what it used to be. I mean, back in the beginning when I was uploading things on MySpace, it was just like, make the album, put it on the internet, put a link on MySpace, and that was it.
Yeah, you're finished. Right.
And, I'm not saying that I don't like the fact that, like, you know, I can go out and buy any guitar that I want to buy. I can go out and, like, I'm never going to pay for strings again. I'm never going to pay for guitar picks again. So that's a good thing. But, like, I think maybe there could be a little, like, simplification.
It's just something about I talk about this every episode. It's something about the tangible, and it is a little bit.
No, there's definitely something there. But yeah. I mean, maybe instead of stocking like four t-shirt designs, I do two. Maybe instead of like,
I think you should do 10 and quit your job. No.
Yeah. No. Oh my God. I'd rather have zero merch than try to do music full time.
Wise, you have chosen wisely.
Yeah. That would be so not fun for me.
Yeah. You'd be stressing out all the time because then you'd be like, you know what I need is shirts.
Well, like,
and to tour.
Yeah. Like, for example, this year I've been super busy with work. I've been focusing a lot of my time and energy into my like legitimate career this year. And as a result, like, I haven't really written that much. Like, I certainly don't have enough for an LP or for a full length this year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. Like,
yeah,
I can be like, all right, I guess this year I'm just not going to do a thing. Man, if I had to like, if I was counting on music to like pay bills, I would be stressing out right now.
You're not producing fast enough. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it's like, all right, well, I have to make some music right now. And then I sit down and just like crap. I was like, I guess this is the best I can do right now. I'm going to put this out. And you know that there would still be people like, oh yeah, this is great, but I would know it was crap and I don't want to be in that situation.
Right on. I think you're doing it right, man. I'm hoping that your story and everything that you're talking about inspires people to stop basing what they want to do off of everything else that they're seeing and just go down to your basement and make some noise and record it and do it yourself. And if it's not good, get rid of it and delete it. Yep.
And if you like it and it represents who you are and it's like, it's well put together and it makes you feel something, then that's a success.
Yeah. You won.
Yeah. It's easy to say when you don't, you know, but you don't need additional income, but it's not about like the dollar sign, you know. It's,
right.
It's not about like the financial aspect of it. It's just about like, oh, I made something and like I'm listening to it and I'm feeling something. That's right. You've done music the right way.
Mm-hmm. And Cloudkicker's been building a Bandcamp, what's the word I'm looking for? Been building a catalog or a discography, I guess, for quite some time.
Yeah, almost 10 years. That was crazy to me.
How old are you?
30.
You've been kicking. Kicking. See what I did? I'm so funny it falls out.
Yeah.
You've been kicking Cloudkicker around for almost 10 years.
Uh-huh.
And I just discovered you last year because of Intronaut.
Yeah.
So then I think Ray hit on this too, on 100 words. Wow, you have this entire catalog to go through, and now in talking to you, I'm hearing that you went through and did each of those albums at your pace, the way that you wanted to, and I know that that's the best that Ben Sharpe had to put out. It wasn't here's another repeat, go, ching, 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 ching. There's too many bands out there with that because they want to say they're producing, or I'm scared that we're going to lose any kind of an audience that we have, or we're not going to be relevant anymore because we haven't put an album out for 2 years or 3 years or something. You know what? Mm-hmm. I don't think it matters anymore.
I mean, I like doing like a thing a year for the simple fact that like it's almost like a musical kind of journal in a way. Like, mm-hmm. I go back and let's see, like 2013 was Subsume. And I go mm-hmm. back and listen to it. And since I usually do the thing, like put it out at the end of the year, the music kind of represents, I can go back and listen to it. Like, all right, I wrote that in March. I wrote that in January. I wrote that part in like July. And it represents like, I can kind of understand where I was that year. 2012 was Fade. 2011 was, I think Let Yourself Be Huge. 2010 was Beacon. Like, oh man, I remember what life was like for me through the music. So that's why I like doing something every year, even if it's, you know, some years I put out two things, but they were like, 2 15-minute EPs. Sure. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's fine with me.
That's a lot of work too. It is like 15-minute EP is like, I didn't write that in a weekend. But like that takes time to record and mix, master, blah, 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 blah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's not nothing.
That is a great segue because I have a question uh-huh. from my pal, Jeremy Hunt. Could you say hi to Jeremy Hunt for me?
Hi, Jeremy.
Oh,
or Mr. Hunt.
Mr. Hunt to you. That's
Mr.
Right.
Hunt, yeah. Dr. Hunt?
It's I think he's working on his doctorate.
Yeah.
Undergrad? No, I have no idea. He asked a question.
Yeah, what's up?
The shift from Beacon to Subsume seemed to show a bit of a change away from the more technical metal to one that seems more concerned with atmosphere and creating a sustained mood. He asks, is that a fair assessment from the outside looking in? And if so, what led to that shift?
That's actually a pretty good observation. I would say that's spot on.
He's a smart cookie. I love that guy.
Yeah. I've definitely, I think just as a product of becoming or aging, maturing. Again, like the discovery, like the first thing I recorded that when I was 22 or 23.
Okay.
And yeah, it was all like, it was so technical. It was so like, you know, I was all about like, what's the craziest time signature? Like, how can I screw this up? Like, oh, it's, you know, it's,
let's make it more complicated.
2316. Is that, you know, I had so much more patience for creating something that was like technically mesmerizing. And as I go forward, I mean, there's two parts to that. The first is that I don't want to just make the discovery again, and I don't want to just make beacons again because I already did those things. So sure. I don't need to go back and try to do Beacons 2.0 or the Discovery 2.0, because if you like that, you can go listen to those things. There you go. So
isn't
there's
the funny, no one says two anymore. No one says, like, we're yeah. so digital now. No one says, like, I'm not going to go make Beacons the sequel or Beacons 2. It's 2.0.
I like the 2.0 because it means that you're not saying, like, also.
Right.
You know?
I got you. I just think it's funny that everyone has a decimal point in there.
Yeah, we definitely didn't say those things 20 years ago. Nope. Like, the 2.0 wasn't a thing.
We didn't even use decimal points 20 years ago.
They didn't exist, really. I mean, if you go back, and it's like black and white, you know how every, like before color TV, like the color, it was because life turned into color. Like, that's correct. Why it.
God made color in like mid-50s and before
so
that.
It's kind of like the same thing as that. Like, there were no decimals before Windows 3.1.
did I just unrail everything you were saying?
No, because I was just saying that there's the two sides to the me going away from technical stuff is part, like, I don't want to just repeat myself over and over again and sure, do the same right. thing. And then the second thing is just like, I'm so much more interested in structure and atmosphere, like he was saying, atmosphere and mood and subsume. Interestingly enough, like, maybe you'll find this interesting. I got the idea for the album title about halfway through writing it.
Okay.
And I was listening to the last track on that Jimmy Eat World album.
Clarity,
yeah.
When someone says that Jimmy Eat World album, they're usually defaulting to Clarity.
We've all heard that album, right?
Yeah, many, many times.
Well, the last song is like 16 minutes long.
Yeah.
And it like change it. It does this. It just, it does the thing that like I kind of do, where you just like take an idea and repeat it over and over and over and over and over again. But then at every repeat, it like something subtle about it changes. So by the time you're done listening to the song, it's a completely different song, even though the core idea never really went anywhere. That's which
very,
I just
very
I've always
Crimson-esque of you. I like that.
Yeah, I've always been fascinated by that, and I've always gravitated toward bands that did that, you know. And I was just listening to that song, and just that I just found myself so consumed by it, and then that word popped into my head, like subsumed to, like, you know, just kind of become part of your surroundings. Like, you just, the differentiation between yourself and what's around you kind of blurs. That was a cool, because the songs that I had been writing up until that point that would become subsumed, kind of, they were, I was not worried about like I'm going to keep this part short. I was like, if I thought a part needed to be short or shorter, I'd make it longer and I'd make it like do more evolving.
Oh, dude, I love it.
And I was really exploring just like after listening to that song and kind of being reminded of that concept. Mm-hmm. I just, that album to me was just about space. Like, you know, that's why the song titles are huge. The track lengths are huge. Like the sound is huge. There's like probably double the amount of guitar tracks than I usually would do. You know, everything's like doubled and quadrupled and there's so much, the sound is so dense that everything about it was just completely blown out because that was like, there was Beacons and then I did Let Yourself Be Huge and then Fade. And I really wanted to come back to like a kind of a heavier vibe.
Yeah.
And also like I tuned the guitars down a whole step lower. So it was down in A instead of B. Mm-hmm. So everything about it was just huge. But I really wanted that quality of like, you listen to it and you just like lose your mind. Like you just find yourself in this wall, this kind of like pulsating wall of sound. That's really what I was going for.
Just kind of floating a little.
Yeah. Like kind of forget when the song started and you don't care anymore about when it's going to end. You're just kind of in it.
Yeah. You're not looking for that like automated, when are we returning to the verse and the chorus so we can outro this thing, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Very cool. I love everything I just heard. That's more interesting than the typical get out of there in 305 type of attitude of, you know,
yeah,
loop this part around again, do that again. Everybody liked that part, do that again. Jimmy Eat World, my God. I mean, that album was quintessential. I know people that hate everything that isn't metal.
Yeah.
Clarity's amazing.
Oh, it's a crossover. Like it pulls from all sorts of different directions, like people that are into that album. Yeah. I mean, that's definitely, I don't know anyone that doesn't know that album and doesn't think it's amazing. There's a quality to it that is very broad, but it was so independent sounding also. They just made a really good album.
Yes, they did. They kind of nailed it.
Yeah.
What else has had that big of an influence on you?
I was just talking about something. Tycho?
Tycho?
Tycho.
Unfamiliar with Tycho.
Do you know Boards of Canada?
I feel like I've heard of that.
It's like electronic music, so if you're not particularly keen on that vibe, like I don't know why you would know about it.
Maybe it was just back to the map joke.
Right. Sort of.
Swing and a miss.
Uh-huh.
Cut steps out of the box.
Sort of like that. Not really the same, but yeah, I get where you're coming from. I was just telling someone that the Tycho album Dive is definitely on my desert island. Pretty much anything that Converge has done.
Okay, now you're back in my wheelhouse.
Right, there you go. Right. I was talking to a friend of mine about how, you know, is Converge like the most solid band in history? Like solid in the sense that like every album that comes out, you know exactly what it's going to sound like beforehand, but you don't care because it's like they just do the same thing over and over again, but it's always new.
They can do, you already know what it's going to sound like, but they still manage to surprise you how good it is.
Exactly. Exactly.
And there's just myself for the Canada joke.
Yeah. And it's,
not to mention they're a franchise among themselves. Converge is an empire. Uh-huh. The drummer is in this band and that band and that band and that band. Their bass player has
a bunch of other bands.
His own merch company.
And Kurt Ballou is so influential in his production.
Kurt makes bands sound the way that they sound sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah. He's defined a style of music that sound. You can always tell when something's was recorded at God City, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. There it's a studio that has its own sound. And if you take all the members of Converge and go down the family tree with all the other people that they've been involved with it's half your record collection.
Yeah. So that's hugely influential. And the interesting thing about Converge, and probably one of the reasons why I like them so much, is that I wasn't really a Converge fan until I saw them live. And it was their live show, and they're one of the very few bands that have done that for me. Their live show really, I was a fan after that. And then I went back and listened to, I think Jane Doe was the album out at that time. And that, obviously that's a masterpiece.
Yep, it is.
And I burned a hole in that. Their most recent one, I could listen to any day of the week. And there's just like the music is so aggressive and it's so abrasive, but there's this like hauntingly melodic, melancholy quality to the music itself that is so much more thoughtful than like pretty much all the other metal that I know of. Yeah, you know,
I understand what you mean.
And that's just my wheelhouse. It's just thoughtful, melodic music that was put together well. I don't care what genre it is.
Yeah. Yeah. They're a smarter band at what they do. Definitely.
Yeah.
My, I'm getting more into Converge now.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, the band, how you just spoke of Converge.
Yeah.
Is how I talked about Coalesce.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. They were like, they transcended for me. I was like, these guys are just so out there.
Yeah.
I'm into it. I love it. I just loved all the,
I think I just missed them.
Yeah. I recommend Circling Back, man. This is
okay.
Crazy.
Any album in particular?
The one that I like to use the term kicked a dent in my head that hasn't healed yet.
Yeah.
An EP called Functioning on Impatience. And you can skip track two. It's like a noise track. So it's six songs and it just gets you through it. And it's just, it is masterpiece, in my opinion. I run with a plan, with every trail. Run to God, to my strength of body. Strutting up the field against me, knowing God you took away. Don't buy it, brother. Never manage way below. Let's fly. Nothing.
You know what else is going to kick dents in people's heads is the new Intronaut album.
Oh, you spoke of that before we got started. What do you know?
Yeah, I can't stop listening to it. I've probably listened to it 10 times already.
It's out?
No.
Oh.
But when you tour with Intronaut and you have to smell their farts for 30 days in a row, one of the privileges that you get is that you get to listen to their new music before everybody else.
Hmm. So what can you tell us about it?
It finally sounds like the way that they should sound because they did it right. And they got Devin Townsend to mix it and master it Yeah. So it's, just the production is flawless. The thing that I really like about it, I was talking to Joe. I called him the other night because I was listening to it again. I was like, I got to talk to someone about this. I called him the other night and I told him that like,
you can send me a copy and then talk to me about it.
Yeah. They swore me to secrecy.
I understand.
If I break that trust, they'll break my kneecaps. So
make me smell their farts for another 30 days.
I'll be walking through an airport and Danny's just going to come out of someone's suitcase with a baseball bat and he's going to just break my kneecaps. So I can't risk that.
I can't have that happen to you. I'll wait. No. I'll wait for it to come out.
Yeah. But, the thing that I really like about it is that they weren't afraid to go a little more in the direction of melody. Mm. And they have these like almost like hooks in their songs. I'm
excited to hear that.
That are so good. Like, just, and I listened to it. I had listened to it a few times. So I went back and I listened to, what's the one with the blue cover with the birds on it? Prehistoricisms. I went back and listened to Prehistoricism. And that's like weird, like as weird that I think that's like the weird one where they just did like,
that was an EP, wasn't it?
No, that was a full length.
Oh, okay. I'm good.
But anyway, just it was so striking to me how like they, you know, again, they just weren't afraid to do something more melodic. And, but at the same time, you can't fault them for it because the prog parts and the, like the kind of proggy jazz parts are still there. Like it's all the things you like about Intronaut, but mm-hmm. like fine tuned and with new stuff, it's going to blow your mind. So,
when's it coming out?
I think in November. I think that's what I heard.
I'm going to buy that.
So a couple months. Yeah. That's going to be a good deal. I think,
from a record store.
Yeah. That's one thing you can do. I think that it's going to give them a significant boost. Like, I'd be surprised if they didn't get like a lot of recognition for it, but I've been wrong before.
I think there's a lot of amazing music that is coming out.
Yeah.
And I just don't feel like the bands are getting the proper recognition. I mean, they're getting recognition for it, mm-hmm. but they're not getting the payday.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
and when I mean payday, I don't mean like now Intronaut can buy a third house with a pool. I just mean like they're media darlings and all the right people are saying the right things about them. But then opening week numbers are like, wah, wah, and I'm just kind of sad.
But those don't matter, right? Opening week numbers, like I think what matters to guys like that more is like when you go out on tour, like are you filling the shows? Like are people coming for you and are they like into what you're doing? No. Because that's
they're not. I mean, maybe Intronaut will, but I have bands that I absolutely adore and love, and I can't believe how moderately to, in my opinion, unsuccessful their tour was. And I showed up and there's 60 kids there.
Maybe you have really bad taste in music.
How dare you?
I'm just kidding.
Maybe.
Well, that happens. That happens sometimes. I mean,
it does. And it's just a shame because I talk about this on the podcast a lot too. It seems like everybody has to be like the guys in Converge. Everybody has to do 15 things to stay afloat because the music thing is just kind of.
Yeah. Being successful takes a lot of work.
Well, I mean being successful with doing, you're splitting your focus among 15 other things because you're collecting a small payday from all of them.
Right.
And trying to keep them all afloat. And while you're concentrating on being a pilot, you're not concentrating on Cloud Kicker. And
that's right.
And while you're writing Cloud Kicker, you're not flying an airplane. So you found out a way to balance the two, and you found one that pays bills and one that lets your artistic yayas out.
Yeah.
But the guys that are on the road paying their bills and sending the money home to their wives to do it have to do 15 things. And while they're doing this thing, they're not doing that thing. And while they're doing that thing, they're not doing this thing. And I just feel like, oh God, I feel stressed out for the guys that are driving around stressed out that they're not making music.
Yeah. But you know, if anything, for anybody doing anything, like if it's not worth it anymore, you shouldn't do it.
That's fair.
I mean, it my job isn't a walk in the park. I'm gone from home 3 to 4 days a week. And the time that I, you know, sometimes like at the end of this month, I'll work 10 out of 11 days with one day off in the middle. I mean, it's not easy to do something that it's not easy to have a career that sustains you without, I mean, there's a trade-off. Like if you want to have a comfortable life, you got to give something to do that.
Right.
And obviously if I had the if I was so uncoupled from the idea of, from like kind of like the Western idea of success, meaning like, you know, what do you have to show for it? If I was so uncoupled from that, that I could live off of $250 a month, I wouldn't have to do the things that I do.
Mm-hmm.
But I, every single day, I decide that I still enjoy all the things that I do mm-hmm. enough to keep doing them. And it's still worth the time that I put into it, the time I spend away from home and from my wife, who like I when it comes down to it, like I don't really want to do, like I want to have as much time to enjoy life with her that I can. So being gone sometimes 4 or 5 days a week is, that's huge for me. Like
sure.
What I'm doing during that time has to be worth it. Otherwise I shouldn't do it, you know?
Gotcha.
So there's that. I mean, and an interesting thing that I learned from doing that tour is that there's kind of some interesting parallels between what I do for a living and what touring musicians do. You know,
what's
it's like the glamour for both for me as a pilot and for touring musicians, I think that people think it's much more glamorous than it actually is, because a lot of what being a touring musician is driving over the road, all hours of the day and night. And then you get to a venue and you set up your gear and then you sit around for a few hours and you play for 45 minutes to an hour and then you tear it all down and repeat. So,
right.
You know, 23 hours in the day, you're building up to that 1 hour a day where you're actually in your element. So the idea of kind of sitting around waiting for, or sitting around in hotels, sitting around in vans, sitting around at a venue, that's a lot of what being a musician is.
Yep.
And the pilot thing, there's a lot of stress, there's a lot of hotels, there's a lot of airports, there's a lot, you know, and then nestled in all of that is the thing that we all love doing, which is flying.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of other stuff that comes along with that, you know, the time spent away from your home, time spent away from the comforts of home, comforts of your relationship. And being in stressful situations, being in all sorts of different environments. The similarities there being that, like, you're just spending, you're not necessarily spending all your time on the thing that you really want to do, but the stuff you put up with gets you to what you want to do. So you put up with it.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And just like being in different places, you know, there's a pretty literal analogy there of like, you're away from home and you're in different cities every night.
Yeah. Wow. I would have never had that perspective on it because not a pilot, but I guess I can see where you're coming from.
But I mean, back to the thing about like, I don't know, the musicians that I know that I've met, and I don't know very many because I'm not very well connected, but it just seems to me like they share, like they're so passionate about it that I'm sure you're going to find some people that are really burnt out, that are really bitter, and that are really unhappy to be doing what they're doing, but they don't feel like they have an option. And you'll find those same people probably in any career path that you choose to look at.
Amen.
I know I come across people like that in my job where it's like they dump so much, you know, time and money into their education, into getting to where they are, and they just don't enjoy it anymore. And that sucks. That's unfortunate.
It is.
But there's still, like, for every single person, they wouldn't do it if they didn't feel like it was worth it on some level, you know, mm-hmm. even if it's on a level that they can't really explain,
mm-hmm.
you know, that I think that quality is the same, in a lot of careers. I don't think it's unique to just music.
Yes.
And you know, what career, I don't know, like, I don't know how many different people that you know that are in different careers, but I mean, just from the ones you do know, like, is there anybody that you can talk to right now that's going to tell you that, you know what, I think I'm making enough money and I might even be overpaid and I get enough time off and I feel just like I'm in a perfect space? I don't know anybody that would say that.
None come to mind, but
I mean, my wife was a teacher for a while. So like that's all over the place there. I mean, no one is going to tell you that like teachers are fairly compensated regardless of how you feel about it.
Sure.
Shit. Pilots think they're underpaid. Musicians think they're underpaid. I'm sure people that are doing podcasts think they're not fairly compensated for what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You name it, man. And that person's going to, you know, you go to survey 100 different career paths in the United States and ask them what their level of compensation is. I'm sure that the vast majority are going to come back and say that they're not fairly paid. So again, it's not something that's unique to music.
Religious guy?
No, not really.
You seem very enlightened.
Well, I take that as a huge compliment.
I meant it as one.
Yeah. I grew up religious.
Okay.
In that we went to church every Sunday, but you know,
what type of church?
It was Presbyterian.
Oh, okay.
Naturally, when I turned 17, 18, basically as soon as I got my driver's license and I could choose where I was going to be at any given time, I stopped going to church.
Church lost.
Yeah, for sure. There was a lot of stuff out there that was way more fun than church and youth group.
Right on.
And a lot of that involved music at that time. And then I think there was probably about a 6-month period of my life where I would have told you like straight up, like, I am an atheist. There is no such thing as God. Like, that's bullshit. Like,
okay.
And that was probably when I was, I want to say like 19 or 20.
Okay.
Sometime in there, I was just so certain of that fact. And then in 2006, I just had a sequence of events happen to me that, really broke down a lot of what I thought I knew about the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through a period of depression because just everything was not making sense anymore. And I had to just kind of start over with, all right, well, what do I know for sure? And I've been doing that ever since. So that's 9 years now. I've been kind of, I'm only going to assume things that I know to be true kind of thing.
Okay.
And at this point, like, the whole religious thing, that just kind of is weird to me, because I feel like atheist, Christian, Muslim, like whatever, like Buddhist, Zen, Taoism, like the whole scope of religious theories, and I include atheism on that continuum.
Okay.
They're all kind of, they're saying the same things just from a slightly different perspective. And if you zoom out from all of it, like, the basic thing that they're trying to say is that something's going on and we're not really sure what it is.
that's fair.
And then, and nestled in that, the key thing is that just be nice to everybody.
Yeah, that's a fair perspective. That's interesting that you said it like that.
But that's about all you can say, right? I mean, I took a bunch of philosophy classes in college, and I know that pretty much any discussion that you get into with someone about anything will always, no matter how much time you spend on it, it's always going to end at, I don't know.
It always seems to end with, but that's my perspective.
Yeah, either that or either, well, that's just what I think, or,
right,
well, it's all bullshit anyway, and nothing matters.
Mm-hmm.
Or
some people tend to be more militant with their perspective, so they kind of ruin their own cause. I happen to be cut from the Christian cloth, and I just can't get on.
So board. Are you currently a practicing, like, you go to church and all that?
Yep. Yeah, Presbyterian, actually. Yeah.
Really?
Yep. Go to a Presbyterian church. And I have to admit that it seems like every time Christians make the news, I want to kind of cover my head, because I feel like, oh God, that wasn't interpreted correctly, and you shouldn't be on the news doing what you're doing, because.
But okay, but there's a narrative going on right now, and it's not exactly favorable to. Like, right now, in, like, the current climate, what we're talking about, I guess you're talking about the whole, like, the gay marriage thing is the current, like...
Oh, the Kim Davis thing?
Yeah.
Is
that what you're referring to?
In my mind...
talk about Christians in the news?
In my mind, I was defaulting to Westboro Baptist.
Yeah,
but,
okay.
But yeah, same road, different lane, I guess.
I mean, we don't need to get into that, because it's just silliness. I mean, like... Just every 2 weeks, here's what you should do. Every 2 weeks, just take a screenshot of your Facebook feed and put them in a folder somewhere on your desktop, and then go back a year from now and just look, oh, there was this outrage. There's the gay marriage thing. Do you remember the when everyone was upset at Hobby Lobby, and all of a sudden everybody was a freaking, everyone had a law degree, and they were coming out of the woodwork and saying, like, this is, you know, Hobby Lobby is this evil corporate. I mean, and then that passed.
Yeah.
Then we have, like, everyone's all pissed off about, you know, Donald Trump and Kim, what's her name? Like, that's going to pass. Like,
I know.
Yeah. We're going to move on from it. So that's just noise. I mean, all the stuff that
we're not moving on from it. it's just going to
keep. Yeah, we are.
It's
the same, the news,
and people keep saying the same stupid things, and other people want to say stupid things back to them, and everybody, that's the common thread, is everything that you said, and be nice to each other, and deep down, the majority just all wants to fight. Everybody just wants to be obstinate for the sake of obstinance, and it frustrates the hell out of me, because I don't think I'm that way. I mean, I'm a human being. I guess things can go wrong in my mind, and sometimes I get a soured opinion of somebody, but it really frustrates me that I have to hear that this one person is doing this one thing, but now I've heard the perspective of 75 other people and what they think about the one thing, and it's all a waste of time. All of it.
Well, you know what every argument is? Every single argument between two people is always one person says, I'm trying to do the right thing and you don't get it. And then the other person says, no, I'm trying to do the right thing and you don't get it.
Right.
So it's like, okay, well, and being married has really drove this lesson home to me. Like, No, seriously. I mean, you learn a lot trying to share a life with another person, because you're going to step on each other's toes, and then you're going to have to.
Yeah.
Like you come from different perspectives, like we were talking about. Like, so the one person thinks that the other person doesn't know that, you know, the thing that you think that is crazy that I'm doing actually makes sense to me, and to me, that's the right way to live my life. Right. And then the other person says, basically, I don't understand why you would think that that's the right thing to do when it's so obviously this other way to be, because they come from a completely different background.
Right.
And the amalgam of concepts and interactions with people and situations that they've seen in their life has painted a certain picture for them. And they see that this is what you do. And the other person, even if it's just slightly different, they can think something completely crazy to them, and they just can't communicate the difference between the two of them. And that's every single argument is just, I'm trying to do the right thing. No, you're not. That's the wrong thing. I'm trying to do the right thing. Back and forth throughout history.
Agreed. And I feel where we've gone wrong is if you and I pick a topic and you sit down and tell me your side of it, and I go, that's not really how I look at things.
Yeah.
Well, why not, Trav? What, how do you look at things? I look at things this way. We have to be willing to sit down,
absolutely,
and discuss it, so I can go, you know what? I didn't see Ben's perspective on that, but I get he just gave me like a small glimpse into his 30 years, and I'm going to give you a glimpse into my 40 years. And if somehow we don't – yeah, I know I'm 40. I know you're thinking – you're kidding me. I thought the guy was 24, right? But
you look – you don't look a day past 19.
Oh, I could crawl through this camera and just – anyway. If you haven't educated yourself and walked out of that conversation any smarter, then I don't think you have a right – to tell that other person that they're right or wrong. Leave them alone.
Well, you know, I remember a time in my life where it was really hard to accept other viewpoints. And I think the root of that for me was that, okay, so I derive a certain amount of security in my existence from knowing, in quote, in air quotes, I just did that, from knowing that I'm looking at things the right way. So if I'm looking at things the right way, there's no need for me to be anxious about how life is coming at me, because I have this little aspect of it figured out. I don't need to worry that it's something that I don't know. Does that make sense to you? So you derive a certain sense of security in yourself from knowing and from being in control, because if you're in control, then nothing's going to hurt you. And if someone else comes along and says something that is wildly different than what I think, well, now you've just created a situation where if I admit that they're right, I lose a sense of security. I lose the confidence that I have in my interpretation of the world. And I trigger anxiety because since I'm uncomfortable not being in control, if I accept what this other person is saying, it creates anxiety in me. So the real thing that happens to people, that happened to me, is that you just ever so slowly go into a pattern of thinking where you somehow find the courage to accept the fact that you're not in control, and that there's no such thing as control. The only thing you've ever been doing your whole life is being at the whim of this place that you find yourself in.
Yeah.
And your ideas of control that you've created for yourself are illusions. So
it's an illusion of safety.
Well, it's like I'll be sitting next to people on an airplane, and they'll close their window shade if it gets too bumpy. So they think that if they close the window shade and they can't, it's out of their mind. So they have control over that window shade. So they close it. And then since they don't have to look at what's outside, that's how they're going to control the situation.
Right.
But the turbulence is going to happen whether or not you have your window shade open. So that's an illusion in the same way that, like,
But let's talk perspective for a second. Yeah. If their goal was to control the situation by just settling the hell down because I'm scared, and pulling that shade shut, accomplishes that.
Yeah.
And they did.
That's a good point. Because that's the other side of the argument.
Right.
Of, well, if nothing does anything, and you found something to do that alleviates your anxiety, then how can that be bad?
And then the two people sitting across the aisle, one goes, "Look at that idiot. He just closed the shade thinking then that's going to stop the turbulence." Yeah. And the person, and then your buddy goes, "Yeah, but all they were trying to do is make themselves feel better." Oh, you're just as dumb as they are. You're trying to mask the illusion. No, if you technically, yeah, that's not going to do anything. Blah, 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 blah. And then the person behind them hears, "I heard what you guys are saying," and on it goes. And if everyone would just keep their mouth shut,
I think that the root of what that instinct that people have to just, and I have it too. Like the instinct of that your first reaction to something that's different is to criticize it.
Of course, you're a human being, so am I.
Yeah, I mean, my first reaction to anything is to try to tell the person why they're wrong, and it's taken so much like time and effort to just get to a point where it stays in my head.
Right.
Because it's not. People are going to think the craziest shit that you've ever heard.
No doubt about.
And that's just how people are going to be. And you're not going to change that in your, 80 some odd years that you have on the planet. So,
and I'm trying very hard to sit in the position of, I wonder if that person is interested in hearing my perspective of how wrong they are. And if they sound receptive or look receptive to it, then put your head down and I'm sitting in the same turbulent cabin that you are. Whatever.
Yeah. You know, fuck it. Like every once in a while, you're going to come across people that are truly interested in hearing, "Oh yeah, tell me a different perspective," because for some people getting a different perspective is kind of like peering into another dimension.
I'm that guy. Yeah. I'm the guy who wants to hear, "Okay, wow. Tell me,"
Yeah. And sometimes you peer into this other dimension and you look around and it's like, "Ooh, I don't like that." But it doesn't mean that that other dimension is bad. Mm-hmm. It just means that that's not really your jam.
Absolutely. 100% agree. I sit in the chair and get tattooed by a guy who tells me about Eastern culture and Eastern religion for hours on end. And I'm not going anywhere because he's sticking me with needles so I can't leave, right? Yeah. So I hear his perspective of it, and I've been trained as a Christian from the ground up to go, "That's a bunch of bullshit. That's malarkey. I don't believe any of that. Blah, 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 blah." What am I supposed to do? Flip it around and then tell him about this guy named Jesus who turned water into wine and made bread and fish produce out of the thing and rose from the dead? Mine sounds just as crazy, doesn't it?
Well, they all do.
Right.
But what about...
That happens to be what I wholeheartedly believe, and... I just don't want to push it on people. If someone comes to me and says, "Hey, can I ask you about this? What's with you? What makes you tick? Let's look under the hood for a second." I'd be more than happy to share it. I'm not going to pick it. I'm not going to refuse the license of gay marriage. I'm not going to stand outside of somebody's funeral and tell them how wrong in the eyes of God they are. Like, not can I always joke around that I picture God in his big giant at his big giant walnut desk with his head in his hands. Just going, "Oh my God. Like, oh, they just keep screwing up everything. Like, I've given them grace and mercy and they just keep cocking it up,
No.
No.
Well, okay. So going back to something that I learned in church when I was growing up, that has always kind of stuck with me. Okay. That I learned over and over again that God is everywhere all the time. Okay. Did you learn that too?
Omnipotent, omnipresent.
Yeah. So if God is everywhere all the time, then everything is God, right? I mean, that it has to be that way.
Okay.
Is that the way that you understand that?
Everything is God?
Well, if he's everywhere all the time, doesn't that mean that... So, like, what does that mean?
I believe that God's presence is everywhere. I don't believe that the drywall is God. I don't believe that this kick drum is God.
So what it, but so is it something that's not physical?
Is it something that's not physical? I guess not. I haven't really thought of a way to word that answer, but, God is everywhere, but I don't consider God in manifested into physical things because
that's where
idolatry might come in.
Are you talking about like God being kind of like the space between things, all the gaps in the world?
I don't know. I don't know how to answer that. Space between things.
Some people
physical space, like air.
Well, some people say that, like God occupies, the spaces. God occupies the space between the physical, and I take that to mean that, like, God, where we come to the limits of our knowledge of the universe, that's where God starts and fills out the rest of it. Does that make sense?
I think so. I never heard it worded that way, but I'm wrapping my head around what you're saying. Okay.
I kind of think that that's what you're saying, because if it's okay, it's not this desk. Great. Like, I can be on board with that.
Okay.
But if you're saying it's like something that you don't really know what it is, well, then the stuff that you don't know what it is, that's like the unknowns. That's like,
the spiritual realm.
Sure. But we don't have any knowledge. I mean, I don't know. You can't know about that. Right. You have to just go. I mean, that's the whole thing about religion, is that it's, hey, here's our like best guess about what's going on outside our realm of knowledge. Isn't that somewhat accurate to say?
I think it is somewhat accurate, and I think a lot of it is misinterpreted. Mm. And this is exactly where God's stance is, and this is exactly where you're wrong. Fix it, or you're a sinner. Whoa. I mean, again, painting with a broad brush, we're having a huge conversation and trying to narrow it down to two people babbling at each other. But yeah, I do think that there can be a lot to be said as far as we don't exactly understand it. We don't know it. I think that's where the actual freedom in your faith comes from. I'm not going to get wrapped up. Explain to me how God made the earth and the heavens. Explain to me, was it 24 days or was it, or 24 hour days? Or was it, were there dinosaurs or were there not dinosaurs? Ben, does it really matter? Well, I mean,
right.
I don't have the analytical answers. No one does. Like you said, like, wait a minute, I need to have everything make sense before I get on board with this. Mm-hmm. I can understand that perspective of it. I really can. But at the same time, I can't quite explain a lot of things that maybe other people smarter than me could explain them. I don't think faith that it's there.
I don't think you can explain anything, because again, like, just tell me, how do you breathe?
Right.
Tell me how you breathe.
How is this computer recording you right now? Well, it's the preamp is going into the, yeah, but how does that work? Why does that happen?
There's a bottomless well of conversation, and you can talk for a million years and not really get to the root of what you're trying to say.
I will agree with that wholeheartedly.
I mean, try it. Tell me how you breathe. That would take a million lifetimes, and you'd still only be scratching the surface.
I think it's funny that I've actually heard medical professionals say that the only reason that our heart beats is because of what we can only consider to be an electrical pulse, and nobody can explain why it's there.
Oh, electricity? Are you kidding me? Okay, so what is it?
So my heart is beating and doing what it needs to do to keep this thing moving. And I don't understand why. It's just doing it. That's enough right there. I have to have faith that the thing's going to keep ticking until it stops. I don't know what else to say. You know, it's just.
Yeah. Oh, I need to add a little asterisk. Like I just said that, I just implied that electricity is very mysterious to me. I don't know what it is. I didn't mean that like we don't know what electricity is. Right. I just mean that when you start talking about, when you start trying to get into the nitty gritty of like, what is this thing that we call electricity? Like, where does it come from? Like, how was it generated originally? Like, you can't, like, everything in that realm, when you get down to such specifics, you can always take it further and further back to a point that you don't know about. So everything bottoms out in ignorance in a way.
Right.
And I think that ignorance, not using ignorance in the pejorative sense, but just as a descriptor of a concept that you can't possibly have any knowledge of, that I would say that for most people, God delineates that line of ignorance, where beyond that point, your rational mind has to stop and your, if you want to call it, your spiritual mind has to take over. And I think a lot of spiritualism comes back to, like, one way of putting it is faith, and that's what the shorthand that a lot of people use. Mm-hmm. I think I would call it trust. I would call it, I think Eastern religions would call it Zen or something. Mm-hmm. Just the concept of something that happens regardless of whether or not you have knowledge of it. And you were saying, like, you know, how this guy was describing religions to you and, oh man, that was so weird. But isn't your thing just as weird? Okay, well, how about this? And I'm paraphrasing a stand-up by Joe Rogan that I just watched. Like, how about the idea that, like, there's a giant fireball in the sky, and if you don't see it enough, you get sad. Like, that's pretty wild. Hmm. Like, there's, how about the fact that if you go outside at night,
that Rogan gets deep. That's why his podcasts are like 3 hours long.
Oh, I know.
He goes deep.
He does. He does a really good job of it. How about the idea that, like, when you go outside at night, you look up into the sky and it's so big that you're seeing millions of years into the past. Why is it, like, why don't people talk about that? Because that is fucking weird.
That is that's an amazing way to put it. I've never heard it worded like that.
It's so big that you're seeing into the past. Like, that, okay, so that's weird. Like, tell that to someone from a different universe about, like, well, here's how our universe works. Like,
right.
Okay, so life is pretty weird just as is. And that's what, agreed. That's why people, like, go on psychotic episodes, because they just can't take it anymore. Like, this shit is just weird. And there's so much of it that we just kind of go along with, because we're all, we have like a certain amount of things that we all are just cool with. Like, it's like a shared kind of hallucination of, these are all the things that we just agree on. Sky is blue. Like, things are solid. You need water. Like, trees are green. Like, these, you don't have to talk about them because we've already figured that out. But if you really kind of start investigating the gaps in that, it gets pretty weird pretty quick. And life, you know, there's a, like, the fact, what about the fact that most of what everything is nothing? How right. about that? Like, we all learn that in physics in high school, like, that when you, like, I'm sitting on this chair, or when I put my hand on, like, try to put my hand through a desk, the only reason that I can't put my hand through the desk is because the magnetism from the electrons in the desk and the electrons in my hand are repelling each other.
Right.
So other than that, if that weren't the case.
And there's the explanation you're looking for. Why doesn't that work? Because of this. Okay. Why? Why are they repelling each other?
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, circling back to our point, just, for the sake of trying to bring this thing in for a landing, put your tray tables up. You use the information that you have at hand at the time to make the best decision that you can, and don't hurt people.
I honestly fully believe that, that people are inherently good, and that everyone's doing the best that they can do at any given moment. And that gets tricky when you start talking about, you know, people that are widely agreed to be bad people. But I would, you know, you get to the bottom of it, and I really just think that people are all trying to do the right thing. And it's just degrees of misinterpretation that lead us to the conflict that we have with other people.
I I agree. I feel like the world just doesn't take enough time to sit down, have a beer, and talk things out with the other side.
But that's the great thing about technology, because technology is the thing, the great equalizer. You know, see how quick I can make this. Wow. Well, like you and I, I don't know that before 10 years ago, maybe even less, like that this conversation would have been possible, you know? And we're
talking on a landline, maybe.
We're in the same state. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. Right.
We're not even that far away from each other, but just
5 hours.
Yeah. But just, okay. So how did you find out about me? You found out about me through music.
Right.
And then how did you get in touch with me? You got in touch with me via email.
Yep.
And then now we're talking over a video phone and we're having probably like as close to a person-on-person, you know, interaction as we can. You know, like if we saw each other in public now, I feel like we'd have a place where we could start from.
Definitely. Yeah.
You know, we already know quite a lot about each other. And that's fantastic. And I could do that with someone right now in China. I could do that with someone in Australia, provided they were awake. And I could conceivably do it with someone in space if they're on the space station. And,
right on.
You know what I mean? So the distance between people is shrinking, and the ease with which you can find people with similar interests is also shrinking. And I think that if you draw that trend out, it makes it so that it's going to be much easier to discover that we all have something in common, and then it's going to be much easier to translate that into peaceful interaction. So I think in a weird way, you know, they say that some people say that like the next step in evolution is that people will engineer something to replace themselves. Now, however way you want to take that, I mean, there's lots of ways to interpret that. But I think that technology is the thing that is going to help us to do what you just kind of lamented, to slow down. It seems like we're speeding up, but I think that that's kind of an illusion, because the things that are speeding up is just like we were talking about before. It's just noise. The real thing. If you zoom out from the noise, then there's stuff like this that you and I are doing right now. Mm-hmm. And I think that largely goes unnoticed because it just becomes commonplace. And it's going to happen more and more. And it's facilitated by technology, which is just a way to connect people.
I hope you're right. You're right. It comes with a price. It comes with the fact that I can sit here and talk to a dude that I had no prior with and get to where we're at is one of the benefits and the plus signs. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, if I leave the comment thread open under it, you two are freaking idiots. That stuff will come out too easily. There's too much flinging around. And you have,
you have to
wade through the crap to get to mm-hmm. the good. But mm-hmm. My hope for the future is the same. I would love to see technology used to unite people and talk. It's the whole reason I'm doing this podcast, man. It isn't to sell Cloud Kicker albums.
Right.
It's to get people to know Ben.
What I'm really getting at, I'm not trying to be one of those people that's like, you know, look at all the stuff I have, but you don't need that to be comfortable. It's not what I'm getting at. It's just
I don't take it that way.
Yeah, it's just like there's so much abundance right now, and it's really hard to see because when you get caught up in in life, which is a totally reasonable thing to do since we're all participating in it, it's really easy to lose sight of the big picture. And in the big picture, I think that things are as good as they ever have been, and they're constantly getting better. And I think technology is only accelerating that process. So, you know, I don't really see there being a lot to worry about.
That was a good discussion.
I don't know. Do you have any more music questions? We kind of lost those, didn't
how
we?
How could I go back to music questions
now? So, what kind of strings do you use?
So, where'd you get your first guitar?
No, don't answer that. I'm gonna leave that entire thing in. This is gonna be a long ass podcast. I think.
Why not, man?
I think that was a great discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. You ever find yourself landing in Allentown? Say something.
Yeah. Why not? Yeah. Obviously, if you're ever in Pittsburgh, look me up. You have my email address now.
Yeah, we're gonna cut this podcast loose. Thanks everybody for tuning in, and go listen to some Cloud Kicker, and definitely buy the new Intronaut album. And thank you, Intronaut and Cloud Kicker, for making, I think, one of my favorite records I bought this year.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. It was a blast.
Possible. It's gonna be fine. We love you. Take care. Bye-bye.